Mr. Speaker, thanks very much for having us in your office.
Thank you, Dennis. Great to be with you.
When you introduced the Pastor Protection Bill in July of last year, we spoke about it right here in your office, and you said it was limited to religious leaders. You even talked about how limited that scope was and that you expected it to stay that way. Since then, of course, some broader provisions have been added. Are you unhappy that those provisions, which have attracted so much controversy, were added to what was originally a narrow bill?
Well, the Pastor Protection Act did stay in its original form, but, you know, we have a legislative process here, and that means that there are others here in the General Assembly that have views that are maybe similar but different, and sometimes we have to accommodate those views. And so the bill that I developed and unveiled last summer, although it remained intact, it became what I believe to be the cornerstone of House Bill 757, as was passed last week by both the House and the Senate. There were a couple of other measures that were modified and put in the package so that you really had a package that consisted of different versions of about three proposals that had been discussed here in this Capitol for quite some time.
But at the time we spoke, you said, when referring to some of these other bills, these are separate conversations, and you said that repeatedly. Have you changed your mind about that?
I haven't. They are separate conversations. And
but they're all in the same bill. So how is it possible to have a separate conversation?
Well, because at the end of the day, in order to come to a resolution which I believe to be fair, reasonable, measured, I think the way to do that best was the way that we ultimately achieved it by including these other provisions in that bill so that we could address the range of concerns out there on this issue.
Concerns have been raised about the provisions that were added, though. The NFL in the last few days issued a statement implying that Atlanta's Super Bowl bid could be affected by this. A few companies have said, okay, we're not going to locate here. Others have hinted if this bill is signed, they might not do business here. Are you worried that any of those things would happen if the governor signs the bill?
I would encourage those who have concerns about the bill to read the bill first. I think there's a lot of overheated rhetoric out there. I think there's been some overreaction on the part of some.
Including the NFL?
Including the NFL. And you know, I don't tell them how to play football, and so maybe they need to let us do the legislating here, and I say that very respectfully. But I think if they read the bill, I can say to anyone, this is a fair and reasonable measure. For the first time in Georgia law, to my knowledge, we have added explicitly anti-discrimination language, which was something that I thought was very, very important. I know Governor Deal has talked about that, and I thought that he articulated the need in a very effective way for that kind of language. That's in there. And I think if people will catch their breath and step back and look at this measure and read it in a very careful way, they're going to find that this is not Indiana all over again. This is not the other states that have had the problems. That Georgia has chosen a very cautious, measured approach on this issue. And so I think I think the concern should be satisfied.
In the end, though, will the bill actually mean anything when it comes to what supporters of the religious freedom bills are asking for? Because if you have non-discrimination language, which makes it impossible to deny service to someone based on a religious belief, does the bill really mean anything?
Well, ultimately, it's like any other bill. It means what courts say it means when you have specific cases that test the application of the law.
Do you expect that'll happen either way?
Well, you know, I mean, it happens all the time, and with other bills and other measures that get signed into law. So, but that's what it will mean ultimately, and I'm comfortable with that.
Have you spoken with Governor Deal about the bill, and would you like him to veto it after everything that the Pastor Protection Act as originally drawn went through?
I respect Governor Deal immensely, and I respect the authority that's vested in his office. I believe I know his mind and heart, and I trust that he will make what he believes to be the best judgment for our state on this measure. We have not talked since the bill passed. I've had many private conversations with many people around the Capitol about this bill going back for 2 years now.
Senator Johnny Isaacson just said in the last day that this should be a federal issue. And in his words, he said the federal government ought to be the one that establishes the law under that amendment, meaning the First Amendment to the Constitution, rather than having 50 different standards in 50 different states. Does he have a point there, or do you think that Georgia should go ahead and make its own rules here?
Well, let me say three things. Number one, Johnny Isaacson is as fine a political leader as there is in this country. He's a friend. I respect his wisdom. I respect his counsel. I look forward to working for his reelection this year in a very energetic way. The second point I would make is that I'm not optimistic about anything passing in this Congress now or for the foreseeable future on any measure, not just this issue.
No matter who's elected president?
No matter who's elected president. And finally, I would take some exception. I think that I trust states to develop their own solutions on these issues. I'm a great believer in what a Supreme Court justice once said, that the states are the laboratories of democracy, and I believe that. I think states do have the right and authority to develop their own solutions, and that's what we've done in Georgia.
One might say, just as a final thought on this, that you could certainly come back next year with the Pastor Protection Act as you originally drew it up and satisfy a lot of the concerns that have been raised by opponents of the bill as it exists now. Would you do that?
Well, my thought is now is that we have passed a bill that's been approved by the House, has been approved by the Senate, so it is no longer a legislative issue, and for me to predict what we would have to take up next year or not have to take up next year, I think it would be premature.
Another subject here. The original idea of an up or down vote on a regional MARTA expansion plan did not become a reality. But now we have this limited proposal for the city of Atlanta with a roads and bridges offering for Fulton. Some people might say, okay, that's a piecemeal approach to a problem we really wanted to go big on because we have a regional issue with traffic. Is this enough?
Well, first of all, as you know, I have long articulated my view that transit has a very prominent place in Georgia's transportation future. Now, having said that, I understand that there are a number of concerns and a number of different perspectives on that issue. So when this proposal came forward, it was my view that we needed to engage with the local legislative delegations in the areas that would be impacted, whether it was DeKalb County, North Fulton, the city of Atlanta, wherever it might be. We've done that. And this is the, I would prefer to use the word consensus that has been developed as opposed to piecemeal, because we have trusted people who are closest to the people in these communities to challenge them to come together on something that at least moved us forward. And I think the proposal that's out there does that.
But could MARTA sustain whatever projects come out of the revenue it might raise if voters approve the tax under this proposal as it's written?
Yeah, in my view, they could, sure. I think that's sort of at the core of the proposal.
And coming back to businesses again,
mm-hmm.
I mean, is this the right signal to send to businesses and industries that worry about our traffic? And you hear that all the time, I'm sure, when they make decisions about whether to locate here.
I'm very comfortable that it is. I think that businesses will see that we're moving the ball forward. Businesses are not unlike government sometimes, because they are required to do things in increments rather than with one bold sweep at a time. So in that regard, I think they should, and I think they will appreciate that we are moving forward with transit as a part of our transportation future in this state.
Would you like to see a broader bill tried again next year?
Well, you know, that's a year from now. We'll see. You know, sometimes in this process, because of, you know, people are responding to the concerns of those they represent, you know, it's not necessary that we throw a 50-yard bomb for a touchdown on every play. Sometimes we make the first downs, but we're moving forward.
The Senate has passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban the use of any language other than English in official state documents, and that includes things like driver's license exams. Now, it has not moved in the House so far. In these last couple of days, will that move?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure the author of the measure has even asked that it be considered here in the House.
That's Senator Josh McCoon of Columbus.
I can't remember the name, but you know, typically what happens is if a House member is successful in passing a measure out of the House, then that representative will go to the Senate and build support for it and try to get it passed there. And the same is true with a measure coming out of the Senate, that the senator would, after having been successful in the Senate, come over to the House. The indications I've received that we've seen no activity over here, that's a pretty big measure to take up in the final 48 hours of the session.
So I'm taking from what you said that it appears that that will not move, although, of course, anything can happen in the final 2 days.
Anything is possible.
The Senate passed a bill to scrap DeKalb County's CEO form of government, replacing the CEO with an elected county commission chairman, which they have had in the past. Do you expect that to get to the floor by the end of this session?
I think there's going to be effort made. I know that I have expressed to that senator, who has been over here working,
Senator Fran Miller,
very aggressively. I've expressed to him that however we can be helpful in getting at least a up or down vote on that I certainly would intend to do that.
One of the arguments from opponents has been, look, there hasn't been much input from the voters, and that the reason that the CEO form of government was instituted in DeKalb in the first place was because the commission chair really couldn't get the rest of the commission to do anything. Has there been enough input, do you think, before the rest of the state makes a decision for DeKalb on this?
If one of the leaders of the DeKalb delegation tells me there has been and that the issue is ready for a vote by the House, as it was ready, obviously, for a vote in the Senate, then I'm going to agree with him. You know, at the end of the day, we're called upon to get involved in issues that, quite frankly, I wish local governments and local communities could sort out for themselves. It puts people in the kind of uncomfortable or maybe awkward position of having to be judge and jury on questions just like you asked me about matters that do not affect their own districts or their own cities or their own counties. So there has to be a measure of trust in this process, and trusting in the good judgment of the members of the legislative delegation that's been duly elected by the people in the affected area, in this case DeKalb County.
But the DeKalb delegation is deeply divided along many lines, as you know, from spending any time around here.
I'm well aware of that.
Have you spoken to members of the delegation who might not feel quite the way Senator Miller does about it?
I know there are some conflicting views.
Have you spoken to some of those members?
I'm aware that there are conflicting views.
Governor Deal is considering what's often called the campus carry bill, which would give people
right.
with concealed weapons permits permission to carry their guns in some places on college campuses. And Governor Deal has lately expressed some concerns about things like campus daycare centers, to name one. Do you share those concerns?
We had a very thorough vetting process on that measure in the House. It went through many committee hearings. It went through committee hearings on the Senate side. We did not hear those concerns until after the bill had passed both the House and the Senate. I still am of the view, just as much now as I was when that bill was being considered by the House of Representatives, that you do not give up your constitutional rights when you set foot on a college campus if you otherwise qualify to be the owner and possessor of a firearm. You know, if you start trying to pick at the threads of some of these things sometimes, you can end up sort of gutting the entire intent of the law. And I'm not going to ask this House of Representatives to do that.
But there are some places, at least in the view of some of those who've questioned the legislation, like a daycare center or like a disciplinary hearing, for instance, where maybe it's a good idea not to have weapons there. Are you saying that it has to be all or nothing?
No. What I'm saying is, though, this is sort of like a court case. You know, you don't get to sit around and go in front of a jury and present both sides of a case, let the jury reach a verdict, and then have time to run out and try to find more evidence or more issues to raise. We have a legislature that meets here for 40 days. This bill has been through a very exhaustive and very thorough process by two different chambers. And so I think it's time that we put that one to bed, and I consider that it is in bed resting comfortably and will be signed into law.
The House has passed a bill allowing tax breaks for people and companies, any entity really, that donates to rural health care mm-hmm. facilities, which are in crisis right now. Is that nearly enough of an approach this year when we are seeing rural hospitals close?
I think it's a significant step in the right direction. And this is the kind of work that makes me proud of this session. Representative Jeff Duncan brought that. He doesn't represent a rural area. He has no failing hospital in his district. But he was concerned about this issue, which in my view is one of the most critical issues facing Georgia now, and did some very creative, out-of-the-box thinking about ways that we can engage to help these rural hospitals. And I applaud him for that, and I am hopeful that on day 39 or day 40, that measure is going to be passed, because I think that it can be a significant step toward providing the kind of really substantial relief that many of these hospitals need.
Have you spoken to the Lieutenant Governor or to Senate leaders about whether
I have had discussions with leadership over on the Senate side, and I think they are looking at it a little further. I'm optimistic that they're going to reflect a little further and maybe give it a little bit different view this week.
Whatever happens to it in the Senate, is it a long-term answer, though?
I think it can be a very significant part of a long-term solution. You know, we have to have this kind of thinking to tackle this kind of problem. You know, I have a hospital like that in my district that is struggling mightily. I know if the doors close what that's going to do to the community. I drive by when I'm down in South Georgia in a community, and I drive by one of the saddest sights that I've seen, which is a boarded up hospital, grass growing in the parking lot. It's been out of operation now for a number of years. Those people are having to drive many miles to obtain emergency health care and primary health care. And so I'm hopeful that this will be a real step forward, but this is an issue that we're going to continue to have to focus on.
One idea, of course, is to have the state expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, even if you don't call it that. Other states have come up with sort of third ways. Do you think it's time for Georgia to really take a serious look at that?
My view on Medicaid expansion has not changed. I am very fearful that if we go down that path and the federal government, for whatever reason, chooses not to honor its part of the commitment, that the impact on our state budget and therefore on Georgia's taxpayers would be catastrophic. You only have to look, and this is on a smaller scale, at how long it took to pass a transportation funding bill by the Congress. Until they show me a little bit better track, well, a lot better track record in terms of being able to do the work that needs to get done up there, I'm not going to put the future of this state in jeopardy by going down that path.
You've said a couple of times that you wonder about the ability to accomplish anything in Congress, no matter who is elected president. Is the blame on one party, another, both parties, both branches?
I don't think there are any white knights up there. I do assign blame to both sides. I think there is a lot of partisan gridlock, frankly, and both sides probably share some blame for that. I don't take any pride in saying that. You know, Washington is not functioning very well right now. Not functioning nearly as well as our state government in Georgia.
Donald Trump did very well in your district. What do you think of his candidacy? Some people say that part of his appeal is frustration with Washington.
Well, people are frustrated. There's no question about that. People are disappointed that that Washington is not working, and I think that Mr. Trump has tapped into to that vein of frustration, and you know, how far it takes him, who knows. I have quit making predictions about this campaign and will offer none today.
Could you support him, though, if he were the nominee of your party?
I intend to support the nominee of my party in November.
On the subject of getting things done, mm-hmm. We've talked so far about several sort of big issues where big solutions were proposed this year, and on things like rural health care and MARTA and tax reform, which spent all summer in a commission. We haven't seen a lot of movement this year. What would you say to somebody who says, it's an election year, we get that, but some of these issues really needed a more comprehensive approach than waiting another year?
I would say that to look at the rural health care proposal made by Representative Duncan, hoping it gets passed, significant step forward. I would say look at education, for example, where we passed a really significant bill last week that will have the effect of requiring that our teachers teach more and test less. I think that is a concern that was brought to us by teachers and parents and others, and I'm very proud of that bill. I would say to look at the fact that we have managed through passing a balanced budget in 40 days or less, something, again, that Washington has extreme trouble doing, and we're preserving our AAA bond rating, which is a huge benefit to the taxpayers of Georgia. So I think that we can look back and say we made good progress on a lot of issues this session. Do we ever get everything done in a session we want to do? No. But I think we've made great progress.
Is there a reluctance, though, and you may hear it from your members, I don't want to tackle that one this year. I've got to win re-election, or I have to avoid a primary in my own party.
Yeah, I never hear that. You know, I think people come here knowing they've got to make tough calls. You know, you don't only have to go back a year to when this General Assembly made a what was perceived to be at that time a tough call on transportation. So I think they understand that sometimes you have to do that, and that, you know, we have elections every 2 years, and people are, you know, can pay almost no amount of money and sign up and run against us. And it's a free country, and so we're going to finish up here on Thursday night and hit the campaign trail and let the voters have the ultimate decision.
Before the final gavel falls, there's one issue that we haven't talked about yet, casinos. Is there any chance that something might pop up in the last 2 days on that issue?
I wouldn't bet on it.
About horse racing as a separate thing. That's certainly
not this year.
Not this year. Next year, perhaps?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll every year's is a different year. You know, those are big issues. Those issues, I go back and compare it to when we set up the lottery, which didn't happen overnight in Georgia, as you may remember. It, you know, it took a while to do the foundational work, do the educating of the need and what you were doing and what it would look like and how it would operate, those kind of questions that people, I think, still need greater comfort with. And we had some fairly serious discussion about both of those issues this year for the first time in my memory, and I think probably the first time ever. And so just because it didn't pass this session doesn't mean that it never will pass. So, you know, those will be matters I'm sure somebody will want to talk about again next year.
House Speaker David Ralston is a Blue Ridge Republican. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dennis. I enjoyed visiting with you.